So, let us go back to the beginning. And the beginning for Buddhists, as Buddhists, is the Buddha's enlightenment beneath the Bodhi tree. So, in what did that enlightenment consist? What it was, what it is in itself, is very difficult to say. In fact, one might say it's impossible to say. It's beyond conception, beyond thought. But one can say, in a manner of speaking, provisionally, that it possessed three great aspects. First of all, there was the aspect of purity. In his enlightenment experience, the Buddha's mind was free from greed, from hatred, and from delusion. And of course, it's very, very difficult, even while we pronounce those words, even while we, so to speak, provisionally describe the Buddha's enlightenment in those terms, in terms of purity, freedom from greed, hatred, delusion, it's very difficult, if not impossible, for us to frame an idea, really, of what it's like to be free from those three mental states. Because every moment of our waking consciousness, and of course when we're asleep as well, we're conscious of elements of greed, elements of at least aversion or disliking, and of course elements of delusion within our own minds. So to imagine all those states of greed, hatred, delusion as not being there, and something very pure and positive in their place, is very, very difficult for us. But nonetheless, we have to make that effort. We have to try to see the Buddha's enlightenment as a state in which the Buddha's mind was totally free from greed, hatred, and delusion, was perfectly pure. And then again, another great aspect, compassion. We sometimes feel pity for others, for human beings who are suffering. That's pity for animals who suffer, who are persecuted. But it's not so easy to feel even a glimmering of real compassion. Because in the state of real compassion, there's no distinction between self and others. Or one can also say that in the state of compassion, one feels for others as for oneself. One does not experience the usual subject-object, self and others dichotomy. Again, it's very difficult for us to form an idea even of a state of that kind, the state of compassion. But yes, the Buddha's mind, when he gained enlightenment, was a mind full of compassion in that sense. And then there's the aspect of wisdom, in which the Buddha saw things, not from any limited point of view, not from any limited perspective, not in any distorted fashion, but as they really are. And again, it's very, very difficult for us to form a concept of a state of that kind. So purity, compassion, wisdom, these are the three great principal aspects, so far as we can imagine, of the Buddha's enlightenment. But at the moment, this evening, we're concerned just with the last of these. We're concerned with the wisdom aspect. We're concerned with the fact that the Buddha saw things as they really are. So when the Buddha saw things as they really are, what is it that he saw? What does he, as Buddha, see? What did he see, for instance, when he looked at the world, at existence, at mundane existence? Well, in brief, he saw three things. He saw, first of all, that there was nothing in existence that was static. Nothing that did not change. More positively, he saw that everything was in process. And secondly, he saw that this process was not a random process. Whatever phenomenon arose, arose in dependence on certain definite conditions. And it ceased to exist when those conditions ceased to exist. And thirdly, the Buddha saw that things had no permanent, unchanging being or selfhood. He saw that they were devoid of those things. He saw that they were, in the technical terms of Buddhism, shunya. And he saw, moreover, that this principle of conditionality, as we call it, applied at all levels of existence. It applied on the physical inorganic level. It applied on the physical organic level. It applied on the mental or psychological level, that is to say, the non-volitional mental or psychological level, and it applied also to the ethical or karmic level, and it applied to the dharmic or spiritual level. And these, of course, these five levels represent the five niyamas. Yeah? These five niyamas, I'm proceeding rather quickly here because this is probably all quite familiar ground to you. These five niyamas can be divided into three groups. First of all, there are those niyamas governed only by the principle of action and reaction between pairs of opposites. That is to say, the physical, inorganic, and organic levels or niyamas. And then secondly, there are those which are governed by the principle of action and reaction between pairs of opposites and the principle of action and reaction between factors where the succeeding factor augments instead of undoing the effect of the preceding factor. Here are included the ethical or karmic level and the lower reaches of the dharmic or spiritual level. And thirdly, we have those niyamas which are governed only by the principle of action and reaction, where the reaction is augmentative rather than otherwise. The second and third of these groups, corresponding between them to the fourth and fifth niyamas, are explained in detail in the 24 links of the complete Nidana chain. The Nidana chain itself is divided into two sections, each comprising 12 Nidanas. The first is the mundane section, as we may call it, with its action process and its result process and its three points of transition from the one to the other. The second is the spiritual section, as we may call it, and this is divided into two subsections, one reversible, the other irreversible, that is to say, consisting respectively of reversible and irreversible nidanas. The two are separated by stream entry. The mundane section of the chain makes up what we call the round of existence, and the spiritual section makes up the spiral path.